You are listening to Particular Pilgrims, Stories from Reformed Baptist History with Commentary. I'm your host, Ron Miller, pastor of Covenant Baptist Church of Clarksville, Tennessee, and a longtime student and collector of Particular Baptist History. We are on the Man of God Network, brought to you by Covenant Baptist Theological Seminary. In this final study of Shortwood Baptist Church, I want to introduce you to some of the deacons of the church and various aspects of their lives and ministry. Albion Erdank has researched a number of what he calls branches of Shortwood's deacons. By branches, he means that many of the church's deacons came from connected family groups. For example, the Flint family was prominent in the church. Thomas Flint was Benjamin Francis's pastoral assistant and married his daughter Catherine. After Francis died, Thomas became pastor. His son Abraham, along with Catherine's brother Samuel, both were chosen as deacons. Deacon Abraham's father-in-law and brother-in-law, both named William Clissold, were also deacons. The younger William had two sons. Both of these were chosen as deacons. Another grouping of deacons revolves around one of Benjamin Francis's other daughters, Sophia, who married a man named John Heskins. Sophia's father-in-law was a deacon for 50 years, and her husband was also selected for the office. Sophia's brother-in-law on her husband's side was a deacon, as was yet another relative. Many of these men were not just related through marriage, they were also partners together in a cloth mill. They were called clothiers because they were involved in various aspects of the cloth trade. So these were middle-class or lower-middle-class occupations. Marriages at the time had significant social and economic status factors in their making, as evidenced by these branches of deacons. So despite the sizable church membership, this was still a small and close-knit community, largely led by a small group of families. There were deacons not related to these branches. Isaac Hillier served the Shortwood Baptist Church for more than 20 years in that office. He first began work as a pig butcher, but eventually became wealthy as a manufacturer of bacon. He may have been afforded unusual economic opportunities since his wife Maria was the daughter of the illegitimate brother of the leading Anglican gentleman of the area. I can't help but wonder what their conversion stories would tell us. And it's reassuring that they decided to remain Baptists after becoming wealthy, because it was so common for those who rose to the middle class or above to join the state church for the social connections and respectability. Remember, Anglicans had more civil rights than nonconformists all through this time. Daniel Cook was another deacon serving the Baptist congregation. He was a haymaker, so he was a semi-skilled laborer of the lower classes. But he must have had brains and initiative because he somehow put money into funds that paid interest and dividends. And by the time he died, he had a very respectable personal estate worth £1,500. Other deacons were Levi Chandler, a shopkeeper, Charles Jenkins, a baker, and Simon Dodge, a cloth spinner. Another Shortwood Baptist deacon was John Blackwell. Like many, he was a clothier and had a cloth manufacturing mill, which was on land rented from the local lord of the manor. This Baptist deacon still had to pay tithes. These were historically the one-tenth of agricultural produce paid each year in England to support the local clergy and church. Now, dissenters objected to these, but usually paid them as a part of civic duty. This religious tax wasn't fully removed until the later 1900s. Several of the Shortwood deacons were itinerant preachers. Deacon John Heskins, son-in-law of Benjamin Francis, mentioned earlier, quote, was called by the church to exercise his gifts in the ministry of the word. Notice that he was a deacon, recognized as a gifted brother, and thus under the authority of the local church. He was said to have fulfilled this calling with great success in all the surrounding area, so that, quote, his dwelling became frequented by the pious poor who were there certain to receive both sympathy and relief. A true deacon indeed. So loved was Heskins that about 1,000 people attended his funeral. Three other deacons, Francis, Birchall, and Flint, all were preachers in a house in Avening that eventually became a church. A small preaching building was put up on land donated by John Blackwell, yet another Shortwood deacon. But when Avening wanted to constitute as an independent church, the diaconal board firmly opposed them. They suggested that this would harm Shortwood and sow dissension. The Avening folks disagreed and went ahead anyway, erecting their own chapel. This shows that the deacons considered themselves as in charge of the church at some significant level. Indeed, at times, the deacons appear to have acted as a board of elders. They were the ones who led church business meetings. In 1824, some members wanted to introduce instrumental music into worship and also establish a choir. Well, it was the deacons who gave their judgment and made the decision in the matter. In 1839, they divided up the area where members lived and visited their so-called flock. While commendable in general, these things mark a step into diaconal church rule and away from elder rule, helped along by the common English Baptist practice of having just one pastor or elder whose job was to preach. There are always dangers when a church's leadership consists of intermarried relations of a similar social standing. Their interests may be scriptural. They may fulfill their calling with great diligence and grace. They may be a blessing to a congregation, but they may also be unwittingly bound to their own interests. A thought-provoking and sad case is found in the rise of trade unions and strikes in the cloth industry of the early 1800s in the area around and including Shortwood. As factories became the place of cloth manufacture, working conditions and wages could, of course, become sources of disagreement. The miles-long walk to work must not be overlooked, because it kept many men perpetually tired. While pay was greater in the factory, it demanded significantly more effort. Then, after 1825, wages fell significantly, and so there was an appeal for workers to organize into a union and even to strike. As you might suspect, the deacons were strongly opposed to this. Now, this was based in part on the biblical idea that workers should be submissive to their masters. But it's hard not to imagine that other factors also played a role in their opposition. Remember that at least one of them was related to the owner of the largest mill in the area, and many of the deacons owned their own mills. As relatively wealthy employers, they had a certain perspective that most of the church membership would not have shared, at least not in all respects. So some church members joined the union and participated in strikes against the mills. Some of the strikes even turned into riots, and it was alleged that some Baptists, quote, had taken a prominent part in the disturbances. The church's response was to form a court consisting of the pastor, the deacons, and 7 church members with the purpose of arbitration and discipline. And some men were excommunicated for engaging in strikes. No new members were added to the church during this turbulent time, and many hearers stopped attending services, especially the weekly prayer meetings, because they were attending union meetings in the pub, which, interestingly enough, were said to always have begun with prayer and ended with the singing of hymns. It wasn't until the economic unrest ended that church life began to return to something like normal. Now, undoubtedly, these events were complicated, And they do illustrate the obvious truth that what goes on in the world, socially and economically, affects Christ's churches. Thank you for listening today. This is Ron the Baptist, wishing you grace and peace.